in this case, you're not representing one stream of waste, but you're supposed to segregate into different buckets on your board. And as you move along, there's like negative and positive points that you get for different actions. Like if you forgot to segregate the waste, then you lose a point, and so on and so forth. And that made it more interactive and also taught like children like very subtly that, you know, not segregating it was bad because they lost points for it and they didn't win because of that.
That was from the middle of this episode. Are you wondering what is it all about? Stay tuned for the full conversation. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Mission Chunya podcast. In recent weeks, I have been getting a good amount of feedback about the podcast, a few guest and topic recommendations as well. Thank you for that. You can always connect with Mission Chunya on social media. The handle is @MissionChunya across Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Or if you want to send me an email, missionchunya@gmail.com is the ID. As the world is moving away from lockdowns and returning to normalcy, you would probably remember the good times you had at home during the lockdowns. You would have probably played the good old board games and spent some quality time with family. Wouldn't it be really great if you can spread the sustainability message and teach things like waste segregation, pollution, etc. while playing a game with young children? Well, this episode is all about that. So, who is our guest and what does the company do?
Hi, I'm Amishi, the founder of Upcyclers Lab, and we make environment-themed learning tools for children ages 2 to 9 to change mindset and behavior around the environment.
So, Amishi, let's start with the why.
Sure.
What was your intrinsic motivation to get started with Upcyclers Lab? Can you give us a brief background about how it all began?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I had launched my first startup. Back in 2013, called the Upcycle Project, and this was inspired by when I was studying for my master's in the UK. I was actually really inspired by one of my professors who taught entrepreneurship, because he had reached the epitome of the finance world. So by education, I have studied finance and then I worked in a financial services firm and then I went to do my master's in international business. So I had never thought of social enterprise or running any kind of cause-based business. I had always kind of wanted to work for a large organization or start my own company, which kind of dealt with mainstream products, you know, so to speak. So basically, when I was studying for my master's in the UK, I met this professor who taught us entrepreneurship and he had reached the epitome of the finance world. He had actually worked on Wall Street, he had worked in the London financial markets, and then he had actually quit all of those well-paying, really lucrative career opportunities to go and help set up Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. And this guy wasn't even like a Bangladeshi, so it wasn't even one of like his Swadesh moments or anything like that. Like this guy just felt the need to do something fulfilling and he went and pursued this very offbeat career path. And he spoke often in class about how fulfilling that experience and that journey was. And so when I heard this from him, I kind of had a, you know, shift in the way I kind of looked at things. And through his course, we also got to experience many sustainable businesses, startups that worked with upcycling. And at the time, the ecosystem in UK was also very nascent. It was just about coming up. This was back in 2012 and 2013. So there was a lot of talk of upcycling, but I didn't know what it was. So in the UK, I kind of looked around and I saw lots of stores that sold upcycled products, saw other businesses that were upcycling waste into products. And then when I came back to India, I was still not fully convinced that this was a career path for me. So I took up a job in marketing with a startup, which had nothing to do with the environment. It was a travel-based startup. And then while I was working there on the weekends, I would upcycle just as a hobby. And as time progressed, I realized that, you know, this is something that's so new in India. And it's something that has so much opportunity because we generate so much waste in this country. And, you know, the consumers were still not talking about it and thinking about it, but it was inevitable because the whole world was talking about it and it was a problem. The environmental concerns that we were facing were a problem that couldn't really be avoided. So looking at that, I kind of decided that, you know, at my naive 22-year-old self decided that it was a great time to kind of just jump into this head first without doing any research, any kind of, work in this field. And I kind of just jumped into it full time and I quit my job and I converted my hobby into a business. And at the time, the business model was to convert, you know, discarded plastic into home decor products that could spark conversation about the possibilities of what one could do with waste. So we used to make upcycle all sorts of products from waste plastic. Initially, we worked with a variety of materials and then we only focused on plastic. And we did this for about 4 years. And at the time, I was, a sole founder and I had a small team. And I realized after 4 years of doing this that while I was making these products out of waste, there was no conversation that was being sparked. So the whole kind of motive behind the company was sort of lost because people would just buy the products, adults would just buy the products. And they would think, okay, this is my contribution to the environment. I have bought this product, which is made from, you know, waste plastic, and I have done enough. So my original vision was to kind of change mindsets, change conversations, get people to think about how they're consuming. And that really wasn't happening. And, at the time in 2017, I was sort of having this like identity crisis with my business. And I was also working simultaneously on a project with the Global Shapers Mumbai Hub, a volunteer project where we worked with about 1,500 students to convert, you know, waste plastic, post-consumer thin plastics into eco bricks. So they made these eco bricks by hand using thin waste plastics from their lives and a waste PET bottle. And these 1,500 students that we worked with, me and my colleagues worked with, we realized that they were great agents of change. They got, you know, their parents involved, their teachers involved. They even got like the local, you know, political parties, BMC, everyone involved in this conversation because they believed so strongly about it. And, that's when I kind of had my aha moment that I was working with the wrong TG and I needed to work with kids. Because even though with our past company, we had done a lot of sales, we had sold all over the country, we had got a lot of media visibility, that kind of vision wasn't being fulfilled. And for me, it was like, if I'm not fulfilling the vision, why even, you know, go through the trouble of upcycling the plastic? You may as well make virgin plastic. It's not like any of your customers are checking it or anything like that. It's really stupid to be in this business if you're not really fulfilling the mission and vision behind it. And so when I did this project, I was like, okay, I had this aha moment. And I then in 2018 decided to start working with kids. And I didn't want to kind of make the same mistake twice. So instead of just making a product and then hoping conversations get sparked, we made a very conscious kind of research-driven decisions. I got a co-founder on board and we kind of realized that most behavior gets developed by the age of 9. And so we worked with children between 2 and 9. Then through our research, we also realized that play-based learning has a higher retention rate than regular classroom learning. And so we decided, let's make play-based products, you know, like board games and puzzles and storybooks for this age group of 2 to 9. We also explored workshops for a bit because that's a model that's worked in India. But it was something that didn't work for us because we also knew that we wanted to convert, we wanted to create large scale impact and touch the lives of lots of students rather than kind of go deep into one community. Because if we really wanted to make any kind of significant change, we knew we had to reach like millions of students at one time. And that's why we knew that it was much easier to scale with a product-based company than a service-based organization. Also, the context in a service-based organization changes, right? Like the context of a Mumbai-based school would be very different than a Karnataka-based school. So this is why we focused on making products. And we realized that our best TG also was not B2C, because that would, of course, again, not touch the kind of millions that we wanted to touch. And so we started exploring B2G models. And, in just 2 years of starting, we started in 2018. We're now working with both the Kuwaiti government and the Singapore governments. And in Kuwait, our products are being used as a part of the Green Schools programs. And in Singapore as well, there's a recycling company that is using our products to kind of track behavior change and, make a significant impact using our tools in changing perceptions around waste.
Amishi, I must admit, I definitely get people who are really interested and passionate about their work. And when they tell about the why they get started with what they do, I mean, it really moves people. And it's an interesting story and it's a good start. And it's good to know the why behind the work that you do. Now, moving to the actual product, your target group is defined. You want to target the kids between 2 to 9.
Right.
What is that unique proposition that you're bringing into the tools that you're offering them? Of course, it's good to tell them about upcycling, waste segregation and all everything about sustainability. But what is the different thing that you're bringing to the table?
Sure. So we have a variety of products. One of the things that I realized when I was working on waste was, environmental problems do not occur standalone, right? So when you have a problem with waste, it's not just a problem with waste. It's also an ocean conservation problem. It's also an air pollution problem. So it's also an animal conservation problem. So there's so much kind of interconnectedness between the environmental concerns that we face today, that is something that not too many people talk about. And this is something that not a lot of people realize as well, right? So a lot of people don't understand that 70% of oxygen, for example, comes from the ocean. Everyone's talking about like protecting the trees and planting new trees, and they feel really good when they plant a new tree, even if they just like donate 10 rupees and get a new tree planted somewhere. But they don't understand the actual impact that's kind of happening through that. And so we wanted that kids at a very early age kind of understand these things and understand the interconnectedness. So our products are not just on waste anymore. Our products are on a bunch of different topics. So for example, we have a new board game coming up later this year, which hopefully we're going to be launching on a Kickstarter. And basically, it's an ocean conservation game that not only talks about plastic waste, which is what most people talk about when they talk about ocean conservation, but it also talks about like effluence. It also talks about oil spills. It also talks about fishing nets, which is a very significant waste stream in the ocean, and not too many people talk about it. These are the kind of topics we cover. And when we also do that, we also teach cause and effect. So for example, through our board game on ocean conservation, we have a flipping the card system on the board, and everything is very visual. We've not added any text on the board, just so that anyone using any language can kind of play the game, as long as there's one main English speaker who can read the instruction card. So the game itself, how it works is that there are pollutant cards on your main waste board, which is the ocean. And then when they're flipped, you can see the cause and effect of that pollutant. So for example, if it's a piece of plastic, when you flip the piece of plastic, you can see that there's a marine animal that's actually getting impacted by that piece of plastic. Similarly with effluents, you can see that the back of the card that there's coral bleaching that's occurring because of the effluent. So the idea is to also visually show children, because also visuals are such a powerful way to communicate. We're visually trying to show children what the cause and effect of those pollutants are. Because you can tell kids or you can tell adults, like, don't litter. But when they visually see what's happening when they litter, or what's happening when that action gets translated into something else, it's very powerful. And it's something that you remember. Which is also why, this image of that turtle with a straw sticking out of its nostril really went viral globally. And we saw this huge movement of suddenly people banning straws and saying, no, we're going to now use steel straws or bamboo straws, because that image was so powerful. And that's actually what we're trying to do with our games as well, through imagery, through animation, through kind of, nice caricatures, illustrations that kind of really can drive change in the minds of children.
Visuals definitely add value to the entire conversation with kids in general. And glad to know that you bring in different concepts and bring in the visual medium to it. And at this point, just quickly asking you about this particular question. So I understand most of your products are like physical board games and games, physical things. Do you also offer anything on the virtual platforms?
So far we haven't. Also because, like I said, the age group that we are very focused on was 2 to 9. And in this age group, parents don't want their children to be exposed to too much screen time. Which is why we consciously made an effort to stick to physical products. But now, of course, looking at the new situation, and you know, this has become a new normal where everyone's looking at digital education. In the last, you know, 15-20 days, we've just started launching online workshops, you know, which are still very interactive and people driven, and kids can actually come to these Zoom interactions and learn different skills like seed paper making, you know, which are more to do with the environment. So we haven't really refined that concept too much yet, but we're working on it. We eventually want to do like conservation sessions. We're also going to do digital versions of our games for play testing and, you know, for kids to interact with online before they make a purchase. So that's definitely something on the books for the next 2 months, 2 to 3 months. And we should have launched stuff soon. Yeah.
I mean, that was just a question to ask if you have anything in that space, because I personally also feel that keeping kids away from the digital technologies is good. And I felt happy when you said it's physical games. And I've heard a lot of parents also come up with the same kind of suggestions that kids get into too much of screen time, and it's kind of, they go to the virtual world for a lot of things. So at least we'll minimize all that. So that is good to know.
Yeah.
You did mention about the different games and how you're teaching and everything. But is there any structured learning plan, or you have any learning plan that is in place for different categories of kids? Do you have anything like that?
So we don't want to make a learning plan ourselves. What we do is we make products and we make them based on like a certain theme. So what we've seen also with our customers, like the organization in Kuwait and the organization in Singapore, is that they have their own learning plan, right? Because again, like I said, it's very context driven. So in Kuwait, they have an entire curriculum planned for green schools for an entire year. Now, what they can do really well is make very custom content, which is perfect for their context and for their students, because they've been working with the students for really long. But where we can add value is that they do not have the bandwidth to actually make a good product. In fact, our Kuwait customer had been trying to make products for the last 3 years, like board games for the last 3 years, and they had not done well. Because while they had tried to jam a lot of environmental content into that board game, the play mechanics were very boring for the children. So, you know, they were not able to create a board game that was fun, that was exciting, that kind of acted as a nudge to start the conversation and get children's interest in the subject started. And that's where we kind of came in. So we understood their concerns, and we, you know, the board game that we actually developed and went with for them was based on their curriculum and their format. And that's kind of what we do. So because we already come with environmental knowledge, we're able to aid them better than another toy maker or another board game company. Because this is our focus and we have our own products as well. So we understand it, but we are able to give them the manufacturing and design support that they would require and create products that fit within curriculum. So we don't want to make this like a curriculum-based sort of thing where there's a learning journey that every year you have so many games and then you can learn more and more. Like, that's not something on the books right now. We want it to be super fun, super unstructured and playful, because that's also where kids learn the most. And that's where we can add value in terms of creating a product for our customers that fits within their entire story and their curriculum and their journey. And that's kind of what we want to do right now.
I really like the way you put this, because I've known a lot of products in the space for kids that definitely try to get a structure in place. And I feel at sometimes kids pick it up early, but I think it overwhelms them at some point in time where they drop out of the entire learning plan or something.
Right.
So this is a good idea where you just pitch to what is particularly required. Yeah. And then offer that.
Also, I had seen in my research that this is a very Indian concept, right? Like to have structure and to have, you know, very like learning, which is very focused on like outcomes and, you know, tests and that kind of stuff. But when we looked at the international kind of education system, one of the best preschools in the world is the Finnish education system, right? The Finnish preschool education system. And what we saw is they taught so much through free play. Like literally till the age of 7, they do not even introduce the alphabet. Everything is focused on like free play and, you know, just learning through. They have structured play, but it's very loosely structured. They allow the child to really take control and, you know, build their own curiosity and figure out their own ways of like creatively playing, you know, within that time. And when they actually track that, this is why it's one of the best education systems in the world, because of this format of play. And that is something that's so lacking in India, where right now I see parents are like completely overstimulating their kids, and like every few hours the kids are doing something new, and it's a very structured way of learning. And very often children I end up thinking inside the box because of this, because there's no time left for creative thinking. There's no time left for just being inquisitive or being bored so that they can come up with new ideas. And that was also something that inspired the initial sort of thought process behind the company, which is why we didn't want to go this entire, you know, structured approach.
That's a very good point about boredom. I definitely vouch for it. People generally feel like being bored is a bad thing, but that's when real thinking happens. That is when you reflect on your ideas, you reflect on what you've done, and that's when thinking happens. I don't know, but people generally don't prefer that.
Yeah.
So they just want to pack kids with a different range of activities for them to work.
Exactly, yeah.
Fortunate, I was growing up, I had a lot of time to be bored. So
yeah, so did I. Good.
You did mention about the cooperations and the collaborations that you're having with international governments, like for Kuwait, and you work in Singapore. What are the other type of collaborators that you're working in this space?
So we're trying to kind of build three streams like of revenue for the business. One is this stream where we partner with organizations that work on government projects internationally. And typically for this, we focused on, you know, smaller countries like Kuwait, Singapore. We also are talking to, you know, someone in Greece, in Germany, in Egypt. So we're looking at those kind of partnerships where there's, you know, there's a intent of the government to kind of introduce behavior change initiatives, and programs like this exist. And we can kind of fit within that spectrum of what they're trying to do. But apart from that, we're also trying to build like a B2B business, where we work with, you know, large organizations that sell products retail. But then they have a really large distribution network in different regions. So we're trying to partner with those kind of organizations, again, sticking to the idea of having large scale impact versus us trying to build out the entire business B2C from scratch. So these are the kind of two revenue streams that we want to build. And we've seen that this works really beautifully for us as well as a company when we're trying to manufacture, because then economies of scale kick in. And also because we're able to impact a large number of children, which is what we wanted to do. And at the same time, we can fit in within kind of those organizations' vision and mission and what they are trying to do as well. Because a lot of these guys, they don't want to just sell this product standalone, for example. They might be also selling curriculum, or they might be also selling other stuff around the environment. And then this is like a great product that goes as a part of that. So yeah, so this is what we have in the future. And in terms of partnerships, the kind of organizations we've worked with so far, there's a broad range. There are organizations that are not-for-profit that want to use our products as a way to raise funds. Then the one in Kuwait is an organization. It's a not-for-profit, but it's a closely affiliated organization. They work very closely with the government. So they are almost like a sort of execution arm for government policy around environmental education. And they've used our products because they already work with schools over there for curriculum building, especially around sustainability. So that's the kind of partnership we have in Kuwait. And then in Singapore, we're working with a for-profit, really large recycling corporation. And it's a German company that's essentially won a tender to do recycling in Singapore, in a district in Singapore. And they're using our products for completely different reasons. They're using our products in schools to kind of initiate learning around the environment and to initiate behavior change so that the end result for them is better and they get better waste segregation rates when they're recycling. So we're working with a very broad spectrum. And because it's so early, we still haven't really understood where the bulk of the market is going to kind of come from. But this is the kind of interest we've seen from these variety of organizations globally.
That's interesting. And that's very good to know that you're working with a wide range of partners and potential collaborators. I'm sure during this process, you would have definitely assessed and looked at what's the impact that you had, be it getting the message across to kids or in general solving to an extent the recycling problem. So what would you say has been the impact the last few years that you've been in business in this space?
So first of all, what we realized, for me, the learning was that it was much easier for me to measure impact with my previous organization, where we were making products for adults and, you know, we were just making it out of waste plastic, because it was so much easier to quantify that in terms of, you know, the number of plastic, kgs of plastic that was recycled and, you know, the amount of virgin plastic that didn't come into the system. So there was a very simple way to kind of measure the impact for that organization. But for this business, it's much harder because it's behavior change. And we know that behavior cannot be changed. Like, overnight, right? So it's going to take years before we can actually see the impact of the work that we've done. So right now we are looking at innovative ways to measure this impact. And a lot of these projects that we've also implemented are very nascent. So they haven't really gotten the data that we can kind of then process and convert into impact. So it's still a learning for us, and we're still trying to build, you know, custom tools with which we can measure impact in the long term as well. But right now, we don't have any like hardcore statistics to kind of measure the impact. All we know is that the feedback that we get from customers when they're actually implementing the product is really positive. And we've got tons of feedback. We've, of course, sold products in India as well in B2C in a very small way. But we've got tons of feedback from parents saying, no, my kid has learned about waste segregation and this is such a fun way to learn it. And while they're learning it in school, they find this a lot more exciting and a much more engaging way to actually learn the concept. And we've had parents who every time there's a public holiday, they take out our games and like send us pictures of, you know, them playing it, short videos of them playing it with their kids. So it's something that we see, you know, is having impact, but we haven't been able to give it like a tangible number so far.
I can totally relate to that. It's definitely good when you hear from people directly when they say like, I used your product, or just like in my case, when someone listens to this and whenever they see me at a different place, they say like, oh, I listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
You bring out some different conversations. So those are the kind of things that keep us moving because we are in it for the long game. So I definitely relate to that.
Right.
Now looking at the fun part of the question. So nudge and behavioral studies and everything is kind of big term words, if I were to say, because governments at a large scale are trying to use them. But in the kind of products, the games, what are the one or two games that you would say, like, this is the one or two game that I would highly recommend, or the ideation behind the concept or the game? How did you come about if you had to pick one or two games or products that you launched?
So our waste segregation board game has actually seen multiple iterations. We started out with a very rudimentary, simple board game where, you know, it was a competitive gameplay and, you know, it was very simple where you just have to collect. There's like three little carts that collect different types of waste and you have to like roll the dice and move along the board and see if that cart kind of fits within your waste truck or not. And each person is responsible for a separate waste stream. And then we move from there. We realize that, okay, there isn't much interactive play that's going on here and neither is it very cooperative. So we moved on from that and we made a second version. We made a couple of versions of it actually. And then the second most impactful version in our opinion was one where, which is also what we've implemented in Kuwait and Singapore, where we went around the board and, you know, there's kind of negative and positive points for doing different actions. So you're not, in this case, you're not representing one stream of waste, but you're supposed to segregate into different buckets on your board. And as you move along, there's like negative and positive points that you get for different actions. Like if you forgot to segregate the waste, then you lose a point and so on and so forth. And that made it more interactive and also taught like children like very subtly that, you know, not segregating it was bad because they lost points for it and they didn't win because of that. So that kind of feeling stays with them, you know, that thought of loss stays with them that I didn't win last time because I forgot to segregate. So, and also obviously through the game, you're learning what waste goes in what bin. So there's that learning as well, which is, you know, embedded in their mind in a very play-based manner so that when they actually go out into the real world, they recognize, okay, the green bin is for wet waste. And then from there, like this year, we created a competitive version of that same game where you can also steal, you know, your competitor's waste. Also to show like, okay, waste has value. And then we also introduced concepts like landfill in this new version where you see visually what happens to your waste if you don't segregate it. It goes into the landfill. And then we also introduced concepts like composting, incineration, and recycling. So, you know, okay, this waste, it goes into the blue bin, but then what happens after it goes into the blue bin? It goes to the recycling facility, or from the green bin, it goes into the composting pit. So visually, they can also see kind of the entire chain of what happens when they segregate the waste and what happens when they don't. So that kind of also leaves in their mind that, yes, you know, it is good to segregate because I've understood what happens to it after. Otherwise, if you just tell a child, okay, you know, like rote learning, the way kind of what we were used to, that, no, this is what goes in this bin, it's great, but they're not internally motivated to actually do it. So unless there's no like strict policy enforcing it. Like if the cop is not coming and giving you a fine and a challan for like throwing it, you're never going to be inherently motivated to actually put it in the right bin. But this way, when I'm actually seeing the entire chain, okay, like this goes from this bin into this, and this is what happens if it doesn't, then there's a lot more, a higher chance of you actually taking that right action when you grow up. And so that's what we did with this game. And now we're again at a crossroads with this game because we realized that the competitive version works very well for the Indian market and Asian markets in general, which is what we've been working on, like Kuwait, Singapore, and, you know, we've had interest from Korea and stuff like that as well. But in Europe and America, they want a cooperative version of the gameplay. They do not want to compete, you know, against each other for waste or for any kind of environmental cause. So there we're facing this new challenge, and now we're trying to come up with a cooperative version of the gameplay, which is what we're working on, where you all kind of work together to segregate the waste, and what you're fighting against is time. So again, this will be a very like real life simulation where, you know, either everyone loses or everyone wins. So we've come up with various iterations like that to really come up with a product that we know fits with the real life story very well, and something that kind of also works for different audiences. So yeah, so this has kind of been our journey so far.
Wow, that sounds really fun. I can personally relate it to the idea of paying a fine and getting out of trouble to Monopoly.
Yeah.
You get to the day, pay a fine and come. So
exactly,
money is involved, we do get competitive. So.
And you see how so much thinking is kind of impacted by a game like Monopoly, right? Like you're so capitalist in the way you think, you're so competitive in the way you think because of influence of those kind of, you know, things in your life. But at the same time, if you weren't, you know, instead of Monopoly, imagine if you'd played a game all your life that was about like collaborative achievements and helping each other grow and not being competitive. Perhaps, you know, the world and the outlook that we have on the world today would be very different.
I think it's mostly to an Asian way of lifestyle or upbringing where you're always shown the reward first and then made to work towards it.
Exactly, yeah.
Amisha, on a final note, I mean, the last part would have definitely excited a lot of people who are listening to this. They would definitely want to know where can they get hold of these products. So I'm sure you're doing it at a large scale internationally.
Right.
But how can people reach out to you? People around the world generally tend to listen mostly from India, outside of India, everywhere. So where can they get in touch with you, get the products or talk to you about it?
Sure. So we do sell in India. We actually always keep some stock aside from our orders and then try and make sure that we sell in India because we want Indians to have access to these games and not be like that they're only for international audiences. So for us, that was really important. And we sell these products through our website. They can check it out from there. So the company is called Upcyclers Lab. And that's the same name that the website is on with a .com domain. And they can also follow us on Instagram. We're really active on Instagram as well. And we have constant updates on new products, on new workshops, on new collaborations on our Instagram page. If they want to reach out to me personally, then they can do so on LinkedIn as well. I'm available on LinkedIn and I'm happy to connect with anyone who's interested in this.
That's wonderful. I'll put the links to your website and everything in the show notes section of the podcast, like always, so that people can reach out to you directly after they listen to this.
Perfect.
Amisha, thanks for taking time to join the podcast today. And it's really wonderful. I should actually say it was a lot of fun talking to you about playing games around sustainability. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Girish. It was so much fun talking about this with you. And I think I should do this more often. I think you've inspired me to do this more often, put the story out there. And thanks so much for the opportunity.
So that was the end to yet another interesting conversation on the Mission Chunya podcast. I hope you noticed how Amisha pivoted in her business early, stuck to the core principles of having a bigger impact in the sustainability space, rather than just doing the business in the normal fashion. And talking of the games itself, I like the way each game was conceptualized, keeping in mind the end consumer, which in this case happens to be young kids, how they would interact, what they would learn, etc., etc. So head over to upcyclerslab.com to find out more. The links to the website and to connect with Amisha are in the show notes section of this podcast episode so that you can check in the future. Now on to this week's action item towards Mission Shunya. well, I really want to stick with games and toys. I'm sure at some point you'd discard the old games and toys from your household. So while you do that, please do it responsibly. Most of them could be plastic. So use the opportunity to teach children about the process of plastic recycling and look for locations around you where they collect waste for recycling. It's another good opportunity to put things into practice for the young kids. 2 weeks from now, as always, you will get another episode directly to your device. That is if you have subscribed to this podcast. If not, please do hit subscribe or mark Mission Shunya as a favorite depending on the platform and app that you use. And if you like the show, do give a rating, write a review, or share it with friends and colleagues. Like in the games we play, the more the merrier. It takes only about 30 seconds to share the episode link with 3 people in your network. So please consider doing that. So with that, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.